Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to Streets Ahead, your podcast dedicated to all things cycling, walking and wheeling in the UK and beyond. I'm Adam Tranter. I'm Ned Bolting.
You read that wrong. I'm Adam Tranter.
Or Laura Laker. And you are?
Laura Laker. Or Adam Tranter or Ned Bolting.
That was actually my third attempt to get the introduction right. I'm in a slight state of disarray, as I'm sure all of us are. But before we get to the meat of this emergency pod, that's what we're going to call it. What have you been up to? I haven't seen you for a while since we sat in this room last time. Yeah. You've been ill.
Yeah, basically for a month. I got COVID, then I got tonsillitis. And yeah, I've been not really cycling. But one nice thing I did do was I went to Somerset and I saw the opening of a new bike route.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's about, I want to say a mile, maybe slightly less. In Somerset, in Shepton Mallet. And I helped to build part of a stone wall back in September. It's the guy who founded Sostrand still does these kind of work camps where like volunteers go along and build bits of things and dig things, dig up tree stumps and stuff. And there was another little bit in Shepton Mallet under a bridge, saving people from walking along a dangerous road, including lots of kids. So it's really quite nice, actually. It's nice to see some good news because that was the day that
we're
the budget happened. Mm. Not the budget, but the announcement about HS2 and cycling cuts. But
that was
quite a nice little positive.
And you got stuck on a train.
I got stuck on a train for an hour. Me and Andy Cox.
Live tweeted.
Yeah, Andy Cox was stuck on another train going in the other direction.
Not even the same train.
It wasn't the same train. But it was funny because there was a woman. We had some really good banter on the train. There were two ladies from New Zealand traveling around, older ladies from New Zealand traveling around the UK and Europe. There was a mother and son going into town for a concert. And there was a lady behind them whose daughter was on the train that got hit by an overhead wire that came down in the wind.
Ooh. So she was that super windy day.
Yeah, she was giving us the lowdown, and the driver of the train didn't seem to know what was going on other than there was a power outage.
Yep.
But the train got damaged. Then they were all being assessed for a track walk, and then they had to walk basically from the broken down train to along the track to Ealing and leave their luggage behind. So it was quite dramatic. Yeah, we were stuck there for, we were 2 hours late. We were only about 8 miles from London when it happened. Probably could have walked,
Get on your e-bike.
Yeah, I didn't have it with me.
Big pink e-bike.
Down the Uxbridge Road. Yeah. I used to do that journey.
Along the ballast.
Yeah.
Well, no, I didn't do it on the on the train tracks, but you can get on the Uxbridge Road. And it's
Which road?
Uxbridge Road. I used to live in Ealing. Road. I used to go in central London. It's quite a hairy road, actually.
Oh, I've just done a week of commuting up and down the Uxbridge Road.
Yeah.
Have you?
It's
Paris-Nice.
Like Paris-Nice commentary. Yeah, yeah, we use Ealing studios.
Finishes in Acton this
year. Yeah, Paris-Nice. It's been diverted to East Acton. Yeah, it's a terrifying road, really. Yeah. You know, it's got the kind of like the world's most ill thought out and protected cycle lane.
Oh, I didn't even have a cycle lane when I was...
Well, it's got a bunch of wands that are interrupted every 50 yards by opportunities for white vans just to park.
Oh, lovely.
You know, so that it's kind of, you're constantly moving out into the road, moving back in for 20 yards and back out again, then Shepherd's Bush is a nightmare. And, you know. And also the weather, I get a bit fed up with winter, I was just saying to you, Adam, it's just, today's quite cold again, even though it's sunny. I did 4 days filming as well for a documentary I'm making with Jack Thurston.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. From Lost Lanes,
which I thoroughly recommend. The series of beautifully produced books in which Jack scours the English countryside and he's going to do one on Scotland soon for sort of literally Lost Lanes, you know, beautiful little backwater roads that you can cycle and you won't see another car. Anyway, I did 4 days filming in the North Pennines with Jack at the end of February for this documentary. And the idea was we just poodle around and look at things and chat on a bike. You know, I have never been so cold.
Oh my word.
Can you imagine being outside for 4 days in a row? And then the final day, we rode up the highest paved road in England, I think.
Wow.
Great done.
In
great
jeans, by the looks of your photos.
And it was started that I was just an absolute sleet and then snow blizzard at the top.
Word.
And I don't think my core temperature has recovered. Anyway, that's me. What have you been up to?
Not loads, really. I've been swimming.
Do you normally swim?
Not loads, but I take my kids and I started to partake in a little bit of it myself.
Have you mastered butterfly yet?
No. I'm halfway between doggy paddle and breaststroke and mainly been...
Dealing with the collateral?
Yeah, sort of moaning about active travel funding, which is mightily disappointed. It feels like everything's a fight for every square inch or every pound. And given how universally, I know that, you know, some politicians will think that active travel isn't popular, but the crux of it is when you speak to people, actually people want this kind of stuff. And actually, even if they didn't want it, the arguments for it are really sensible to integrate into people's lives, like health, for example, and obviously rejuvenating high streets and not even to mention like decarbonisation, etc. So it feels, it doesn't really actually on the face of it seem to make any sense.
All right, well, that's the theme of this emergency pod, which asks the question, this time we're wondering, where is the money? Is it down the back of the sofa? Laura's written this script, it's rather good. Has someone left it on a bus? Or has it been taken by someone from the roads department? A pre-budget announcement on HS2 last week also revealed a £380 million cut to cycling and walking funding. It's a lot of money. This represents a two-thirds reduction of funding in England and leaves just £100 million for active travel in the current financial year. Adam, give us some context. So initially, this was a huge sounding and indeed genuinely a huge sum of money that was announced by Rishi Sunak when he was when he was the Chancellor of the Exchequer in 2021. And it was over £700 million that was promised over the course of...
Yeah, so you'll have heard phrases like the £2 billion for cycling and walking, and that really stuck with people announced by Boris Johnson. What that means is, you know, it gets split into kind of chunks that actually to most people won't mean anything, but obviously the Treasury go through budgetary announcements, and effectively when Rishi Sunak was Chancellor he approved £710 million for active travel. At that point that he announced it would be over the kind of rest of the spending period, which was 3 years. Since that time has gone, the government has spent so far £200 million on Active Travel Fund 4, which is currently being assessed by Active Travel England. So it's sort of just gone in. That was actually quite late. I understand that it was approved by previous Secretary of States, but because of the changes in government subsequently, and then again, led to it needing to kind of be reapproved. So that only just came out.
Sorry, so that money's been spent?
That money has been allocated. Yeah. And is due to be spent before the end of the financial year, which is the end of this month.
So just to clarify my mind, you know, that announcement was made in 21. We're now in 23. How much of the money, never mind allocated, how much has actually been spent?
What's being spent effectively in 2023 is money that the first part of the money that was announced in 2021. So you've got the 2 years, you have to, I haven't got my calculator with me, but you've got effectively 2 years left of the spending period. £200 million has already been committed. £30 million has already been committed and transferred to local authorities for what's called capability funding. So that's revenue funding, which helps local authorities train staff, hire people, etc., to deliver the kind of good quality schemes that you'd expect, which then leaves effectively fought by at least £480 million that was due to be spent over 2 years. And the figure that the government announced at the bottom of the footnote of this ministerial statement, effectively a government press release, if you like, was £50 million a year. So a shortfall of, you know, if you take £480 million that's left, the £100 million they said they'll spend, that leaves a gap of £380 million for, you know, no apparent reason other than they're tightening the purse strings. But active travel is known to be something you can deliver very quickly. It's known to be something that has a good return on investment. Typically, for every £1 you spend, you get about £5.50 back when you look at all the schemes in context.
And so, that's a minimum, isn't it? Because it can be up to £32 for every £1 spent.
The highest range is that, yeah.
Yeah, and you said this in your letter with Andy Street. And it's interesting because when you look at the return on investment for roads, it's between one, as in you get your money back just, and £5. So the upper range for roads investment is the kind of lower range for cycling investment,
and,
roughly.
Yeah, and of course there's the former chief scientist for the Department for Transport did a study, he now works at UCL, and showed that basically the business case that was accepted and proved to widen the M25 was based on reducing congestion by widening the road. Now, we know that when you do that, it basically makes it better for a bit, then more people use it, and then it becomes either the same or worse than before. So yeah, you can never build your way out of congestion. And his research effectively shows that there's always this optimism bias when you plan these things. He might say, we're going to put £1 in and get £3 back, and that's going to be our 1-to-3 ratio. And actually, by the time you've finished, it's more like 1-to-1. That's on a good day.
Is that misapprehension partly because of the phenomenon you just outlined? I mean, we're slightly off topic here, so I'll bring it back. But that there is, once you do widen the road, it doesn't immediately fill. So, you know, there is a period of time in which it appears to have worked.
Yes, yeah. And so then it gets worse.
And then it gets worse.
Yeah.
So that might sort of explain this constant sort of like sleight of mind that seems to suggest do more of the same madness. And
yeah, it's not
as straightforward as all of that. Maybe
if you look at it like as an outsider and like looking into it, you can kind of see how it happens, but also we've sort of known about the phenomenon for about 100 years, yeah, at least. Yeah, like I'm not a historian, but I know that people looked into when induced demand, as it's called, was first written about, and it's a century kind of thing. So we kind of keep doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result.
I wonder if it's partly a function of just, I don't know, politicians having an idea that, not really being experts in things, and having a kind of idea that, oh, in the past, we've built roads, and that's been other people's answer to economic problems. And so that's just what we do. And I heard someone use the expression reading the future from the past rather than thinking differently.
And in the short term as well, there is not an advocate of road building, but people who are an advocate of road building would, like with other major infrastructure projects, point to the amount of jobs, the amount of interest and regeneration that it brings into an area. But it's the kind of things that kind of, you know, I'm not saying we don't want, but effectively you build a new relief road and then a freight company decides to open their head offices there, and that's good news. But then in 5 years' time, that then becomes bad news because of the level of congestion and the fact that you've got trucks going. They don't want to use the bypass anymore because it's a bit busy, so they go through the town centre, and then you've got people neither using the bypass nor the town centre it's meant to bypass. So short-term gain, basically, a dopamine hit of doing so. But that also suggests that road building is short-term, and it's not. We know from lots of things like the Stonehenge tunnel thing on all these projects that they take sometimes decades to bring to fruition, if they ever come to fruition.
And extraordinary amounts of money as well.
Yeah, totally. And it can just never happen. You know, you might spend £50 million in legal battles and building the groundworks and stuff to never be able to build a single bit of tarmac.
That interestingly brings me back to a question I was going to ask you when you outlined when I asked you about what money has been spent so far since 2021. You said that the 30 million, what was the phrase you used in the
£200 million has been committed and £30 million has been spent. I should say that is within the Active Travel Fund, which is managed by the government's new executive agency, Active Travel England, which Boardman. People have heard of. Yes, Boardman, which you would have heard quite a lot.
Not the only one there, I'm sure.
A lot about. However, the government would say, and I would actually back them on this, however disappointed I am, is that the government has spent considerable funds on active travel via other fun. So leveling up bids, you might have heard of like the leveling up department. That's Michael Gove's department. Mm. Apparently something like a quarter of bids. I think I saw it in a response from Jesse Norman on something. A quarter of those bids have included active travel. In the West Midlands, we've got the City Region Sustainable Transport Settlement. So it's not a fund managed by Active Travel England. It's not just for active travel. It's for buses and all sorts. Mm. You know, we estimate about a quarter of that will go into funding, schemes.
So funding is making its way into active travel initiatives via other means.
Yeah, the government would tell you, as they did today, actually, in the House of Commons when it was raised as an urgent question, that they're spending around £3 billion on active travel over the course of Parliament.
Yeah.
That means that places like the West Midlands, places like Manchester, do probably quite well through devolution, which, again, is a positive thing. Active travel has always been a postcode lottery, and now it will even be more so because areas in shire counties and smaller cities and places that are kind of just, you know, been given funding for a couple of years now to lift their capacity up to be able to deliver better things.
That's like staffing and
yeah,
things.
Exactly. But now they need capital to go and build the stuff that they've kind of designed, and there won't be any of it. There won't be enough of it.
That was exactly what I was going to ask you. So they've spent this 30 million. What did you use the phrase like enabling fund or
capability funding and capacity funding? They called it.
Okay, which I understand now thinking about it. So you're going to get this wave of money. You need to spend it and use it judiciously, but you need to put people and systems in place in order to do that in anticipation and ahead of that funding arriving.
Yes.
But if that pot of money is suddenly a quarter of what you're anticipating, have you then wasted a load of money by putting in far too much capacity and too many people?
I think some people might say that. I wouldn't say there's probably too many people, but you would say that actually, are you getting the most return on investment for the revenue funding you provided to councils to lift their quality up if they've got no way to demonstrate that quality? They've got nothing to build, basically. That therefore means the return on investment for the early part of the funding is less good because you never put into practice what you learn.
And also having lots of little pots is good for large authorities that have the capacity to bid for the money to put bids together because it's quite a lengthy process. And I guess the ones that have had capability funding and have these staff in place or help from Active Travel England are going to be okay with bids. But it does, that kind of further widens the gap, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a whole discussion on the kind of bidding culture that has actually, to be fair, been in lots of different governments of lots of different colours. But yeah, totally. And it takes up a lot of resource, and that's been really disappointing for people. So there is a concern. I wouldn't say it'd be totally, it would be silly of me to say it'd be totally wasted, the money, because of course, you know, let's say a highways officer who isn't building active travel schemes, but has been on a training course to do with LTN 120 or something like that. When
cycle design standards.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sorry. Yes, thank you. Sorry, I'm going into jargon mode. You generally, you know, you might get a housing application through and you might look at it and say, oh, actually, that shouldn't have a shared use path. That should have a dedicated cycleway. Or have you thought of filtering this side street there? So there will be a benefit, but not to the level
we were anticipating.
And also they've now got, we're not in as bad a place as we have been in the past because there's a lot of local cycling walking infrastructure plans in place, and so councils will know which routes they need to build first and which they need to prioritize. And so when funding does come back around, I guess at least there'll be plans in their back pocket, so to speak, that they can pull out, because that's what successful boroughs in London like Walsall Forest have done in the past. They've always kept sort of designing these different schemes, and then whenever bits of money come along, they can kind of deliver.
Yeah, I think Elsie Whips, as I just like to acronize everything. Elsie Whips, as they're called.
Why are they called Elsie Whips?
Because local, it's easier
cycling
than
cycling and walking investment infrastructure plans. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I can see why you call them Elsie Whips.
Yeah.
but they
so catchy.
They are quite helpful. Yes, because they prioritise, and you assume, and the government have said that funding, when, you know, they hope to reassess this as soon as possible kind of thing.
Yeah, along with a lot of roads projects, to be fair. A lot of road stuff has been kicked down the road and also bits of H2, yeah.
There's a difference between, kicking the can down the road slightly in
just
terms
like
of
pulling the rug out.
Yeah. I don't think it would be fair to say that active travel has been a kind of, I guess that's the whole thing, like I'm getting too nerdy. This is about programming. So things like roads and rail have like a 5-year programming. And that means that they can hire people for a long period of time, et cetera, et cetera.
And it quite often goes across to kind of governments.
Exactly.
Over an election
period.
So
you can kind of like plan really long term with what you want to achieve. Whereas with active travel, it's kind of always so far been year to year. Mm. So when you want to cut stuff, it's like, well, we can't cut the roads budget by much because it's too big to fail because all the money is committed with suppliers and supply chain. Mm. Whereas with active travel, you think, well, they delivered last year, so there's nothing for next year, so we could just can it, couldn't we?
Yeah.
That's why we really need long-term funding settlements for active travel. That was what we were supposed to get. That was what was said by previous governments. We would get a three-year settlement, active travel fund 3, 4, and 5, effectively, 4, 5, and 6, actually. And that's not
so
happened.
It's a kind of victim of its granular nature that it's all lots of little fixes rather than,
Well,
maybe you just need to, maybe you just need to think about it differently and just, you know, design a massive active travel infrastructure project like a bounce way.
This is
from Manchester to, you know, London and something like that, you know, on stilts.
It's kind of what my book's about. I mean, one of the things that when the National Cycle Network was first conceived as an idea, one thing about it was that it's something big that people can get behind. It's not just little bits and bobs. It's this national piece of infrastructure of national significance. And then it sort of, I don't know, it kind of raises the profile of something and also raises the ambition. And once it becomes a sort of nationwide thing, everyone wants to get behind it.
Do you think it's achieved that?
No.
Without spiking your...
No.
No, good, okay. No. There's no ambiguity.
But I don't think anyone would believe it has.
Yeah, it is. I really do.
It is, yeah, because that's how it was conceived. But then it's just never been... Yeah, it's, I mean, not how it was conceived. It was how it was delivered initially, because that's there was limited funds available. But
yeah. I felt like that could have potentially happened. I don't think it will happen
with the HS2
cycleway. Yeah, exactly. But I...
Sorry, the what?
HS2 cycleway.
Yeah.
What, there's a cycle path alongside
the
train track?
There was going to be. It was such an exciting idea. So HS2 is actually building more roads than it is rail because it has to do all these haul roads, little roads for all of the vehicles that are building the railway. And so once they're there, they're kind of there and they could potentially be a cycle route. And there's also lots of different bridleways and stuff along the route. And there's going to be a lot of... severance of communities, and so there was this idea to create a cycleway that kind of didn't go alongside it like a straight motorway sort of thing, but sort of in a quality way joined up bits of routes and hallways and went over bridges properly with like proper infrastructure. But then, and this is a point I was going to come to actually, HS2, which is a government-owned company, decided that there wasn't enough money to do the cycling, and this is what's happened now with the latest HS2 announcement and the money that's been taken from cycling as part of that. But it also happens on a kind of local level that, like with housing estates, there was quite an interesting report last year or the year before about housing developments and how they say, oh, we're going to build all these great cycle routes, it's going to be such an active travel neighborhood, and then they get near the end of the project and like, oh, sorry guys, that was nice to have, we can't have it because we don't have enough money anymore, so sorry. But yeah, this is what happens like time and time again, because it's just seen as like a nice to have. But the HS2 cycleway was such an exciting thing. I mean, I became kind of, it was like a thing
you
of mine.
You broke the story, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it's such a great idea, like a wonderful thing. And all these communities that are getting no benefit from the HS2 line because there's hardly any stations. They're just getting a great big severance along the way.
And a HS2 cycleway would go some way to getting people on board with something that largely they, you know, I think is a good thing from an infrastructure point of view, but largely people near where I live do not like it.
Yeah, it's not that popular, is it? In a lot of places.
You know, I think there's an opportunity there. But you think that those big projects are the kind of thing that people could get behind, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen either. I think the thing that people should, as well as being in a kind of, if you're in a community that doesn't necessarily get served by HS2 but is disrupted by it, you would be annoyed. Another group of, very large group of people that I think will be annoyed and should be annoyed if they're not is... almost everyone who doesn't live in a combined authority area or in London.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to get into like devolution nerdery.
Holding yourself back.
Or use any more acronyms. But in London, which is the sort of most devolved part of England, most mature, they have had government support, but are kind of building a budget that is self-sustaining going forward. They think that they can spend, I was talking to Will Norman about this, they are planning on spending £150 million a year on active travel.
It's a lot of money. That's like what the rest of the country gets for the rest of the financial year, right? After this cut.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of puts it into perspective.
My thing is if you're not in London, basically the whole of England has now £50 million per year, and London on its own has £150 million.
Levelling up for you right there.
Yeah, classic levelling up, isn't it?
More good levelling up.
Mm. If you live in a combined authority area, you know, some of them, we settled in the West Midlands, have something called the City Regional Sustainable Transport Settlement, or CRSTS. and that gives you kind of funding that you can not spend quite as you wish yet, but it was basically designed around bus and active travel. So when the governments say they're spending £3 billion on active travel, those kind of funds come into it. So I'd say in the West Midlands, while we are naturally, it doesn't make any sense to cut this active travel budget, if you're in the West Midlands, we have enough funding, certainly in the short term, to carry on with what we're doing, but we need that long-term certainty.
Yeah. Mm.
And for many people who aren't, if you live in like, I don't know, Hertfordshire or...
Almost anywhere,
yeah. You will have the scraps.
So those 3 billion, that includes bus upgrading the bus networks, does it?
Or no. The £3 billion is accurate for active travel.
Okay,
yeah,
right.
I think it seems like central government's not really doing a great job on active travel investment. Wales, some quite good stuff. Mm. They're not building any more roads unless they increase walking and cycling. Mm. Announcement recently, which is really exciting. They were going to build a big road between Newport and Cardiff and decided it was going to be too much money. It was going to blow their environmental budget, so to speak. And they're doing a network of bus and rail and active travel corridor instead, which is kind of amazing. We've got city regions like yours and
How's
Manchester.
How's that gone down politically in Wales? Do you know?
We should talk about this in a separate episode. Yeah, because it's really interesting what they're doing. It is. Yeah. I think they've been really, you know, not everyone kind of understands it. It's been, we've done the same thing for so long. We're still doing the same thing in England. But I think they've been very honest about the challenges. And I think, I don't know, when you listen to Lee Waters, for example, speaking about it, he's very honest. It's, you know, it's not they're going to build no more roads, but
it kind of goes back to this thing of like, do you keep doing what you've always done and expect different results? Or do you sort of hit it head on and say, like, it hasn't worked? And that's what Wales have said. Like, it hasn't worked. Why would we do it again? Yeah. Unless there's a very specific case with a new town or something. Something like that.
And Scotland are talking quite big on active travel as well. I'm not sure, the delivery is quite patchy.
Yeah, the amount of money that some of the devolved nations are now talking about spending on active travel.
I think Scotland's got something like 10% of their transport budget or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing. Glasgow are going great guns. They've just they're just opening a new bridge, massive bridge over the M8, the Sighthill Bridge.
That's great.
It's incredible. They're doing some great stuff. Back in the summer, I was going on about that 13 million bridge in Stockingfield in the northwest of the city.
They're also hosting the UCI World Championship.
Yes, they are. Yeah.
That will bring us tourism and stuff.
Yeah, they're doing some great stuff and they're always advertising UCI.
This is tangential because, it's not really our brief, but it'll interest people. I don't think people have quite realised what these cycling World Championships are because it's the first time that all the disciplines of cycling are coming together at the same time.
Oh, really? I didn't realise.
Yeah. So the mountain biking, the track, World Championships and all the road are all happening in Glasgow in the same 2 weeks or 10 days or something like that. Yeah. And
be great.
Yeah, it'd be really big.
Didn't quite realise it was everything. I knew it was roads.
Yeah, it's an experiment.
So Scotland have pledged to spend, obviously proof will be in the pudding, but pledged to be spending £58 per head.
Which is a whopping amount of money.
That's twice pretty much what the Dutch spend now, although the Dutch are more in a kind of incremental growth. Wales.
Yeah, they've done quite a lot.
Fair amount.
Wales, just under £20. And in England, outside of the city areas, £1.06.
Wow.
What do you get for that? Nothing.
£1.
Sad face on the road. Little sad face painted for you.
Bike parking.
Yeah, some stickers saying, cyclists, stay awesome.
Yeah.
Road CC stickers.
Yeah.
Wow, that's stark, isn't
it? It's really sad.
What was the Scottish figure again?
£58.
The Scottish figure is £58, yeah. And Ireland, to their credit, spending €58 per person as well.
Wow.
So. I think of all the stats that we've shared between the three of us, that's one of the most startling I've ever heard. Mm. Rural England, £1.06.
Yeah.
And rural England, the transport is so poor. I mean, I grew up in rural England and it's like the buses are terrible. I used to hitchhike everywhere. It's so it's dangerous.
Not even. I say I should clarify. City regions doesn't even mean all cities, because obviously you have to have a. So more and more cities are getting devolved governments, but there are plenty of quite big cities who aren't in a kind of combined authority setup. I'm just trying to think, like let's take a city like Exeter or somewhere that most people would pick up on aren't in those combined authority areas, and they, you know, but still have a quite a strong requirement for.
And there's lots and lots and lots of places like that. There's lots of places.
Those
like
are places. Mm. Yeah. Any town.
Majority of the population live in places like that. Yeah. I would sort of like suggest.
Yeah.
Off the top of my head with no evidence whatsoever to back it up.
I'm just thinking of Britain in my head. Yeah. I'm just like pointing. Yeah. And came up with Exeter. But
Exeter's a great example. Yeah, it's quite hilly Exeter as well.
Yeah, Exeter have got quite high modal share.
They have.
So going back to this, you know, we're here to talk about this, you know, this announcement that was smuggled in to some extent and, you know, and picked up on by you. You appeared in excellent form on the BBC World at One as well. I thought you were very good on that.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, good explainer.
From a professional broadcaster, that's very good.
Well, it's very, you were very calm and sang, you know, you did all those things extremely well and lowered the temperature, rather raised the temperature, and just got your message out there. Did you see it coming in the active travel community? Did you have your feeling this might be around the corner?
Yeah, I mean, ever since I've kind of been doing this job as commissioner, just over a year now, for the first part of it was under Boris Johnson's prime minister, which is obviously well documented that he was massively supportive of this agenda.
Yeah.
But ever since his leadership became a little bit sketchy, let's say, and then subsequent, you know, it has been a fight, basically. So, you know, when Liz Truss was prime minister I was at the Conservative Party conference, and there was talks then of the active travel budget being cut, lots of sort of behind the scenes supportive Conservative MPs, you know, making the case for this kind of stuff, etc., which was helpful. And ultimately, things moved on, let's say. So it's always been a fight. But I guess more recently, the Active Travel Fund 4 announcement took a long time to come out. It's sort of way overdue in government terms. And there's a few sort of sticky things that are like not easy, like pavement parking and a few things like that, that there's consultations out from the government that are years overdue. They've not been put to bed because actually this stuff's a bit difficult and no one really wants to take it on. My worry is that we're going into an election cycle not too distant future, and people generally kind of try and move towards broader, more, I wouldn't say populist in a kind of negative way, but more kind of appealing policies, that things on childcare, things that get most of England motivated. And I think active travel isn't one of those things. It's one of those things that's inherently the right thing to do and is supported by most people, but sort of quietly supported by most people.
There's a lot of pressing issues at the moment, obviously, aren't there?
Totally. And there is, and people understand that there are, and I understand that there are economic issues. It's just the business case is so good for this stuff that it doesn't make sense. Yeah, it doesn't make sense to cut it. So I guess the mood music has obviously been less exciting and less loud since Boris Johnson departed. I worry going to an election that stuff to appease the kind of voting public, I loathe to call them motorists because not everyone drives. That's sort of part of the problem of why these decisions get made. But, you know, filling in potholes and things like that will become way more of a topic than it will be, which Laura mentioned before this chat, sort of said, potholes. And the potholes are actually electorally quite popular because everyone hates potholes.
Everyone hates potholes and they're very dangerous to cycling as well.
It almost kicked off between Adam and Laura.
Well, we had a little fight.
There's
a strong disagreement.
We are very, very good friends. But we did. This is, I think, the first time I've ever really disagreed with you, and I don't know what to do. I don't know if I do disagree with you wholly. It's not like polar opposites, but just to get it on record, Laura, you said that potholes obviously affect
fixing
cyclists.
Potholes fixing is good potholes for cyclists. Is good for cyclists. Cycling,
and I think if that's what ends up happening, you know, because that's the kind of policy that gets rolled out before an election, the government will say, "Oh no, we are supporting cyclists."
There's a lot of journeys happen on roads. There's not that many cyclists.
Because we're fixing the potholes. Now, there's a couple of things that I guess concern me. One is that, not my area of expertise, but I think the calculation from people like the RAC of the backlog to potholes is in the billions. 200 million won't cut it.
Yeah, it's long underfunded.
So it's kind of one of those policies that kind of like sounds good, but everyone's disappointed. And secondly, it's kind of a bit disingenuous because the government have this target to hit a certain amount of trips for cycling and walking. And when you ask people why they don't cycle, people don't say, oh, potholes.
No, they don't.
They say, ah, trucks and cars and sharing the road with them. So we know we need infrastructure. So I worry that people will generally say, oh, but they're spending money on things like that. That's good for cyclists. And
I mean, it's not cycling investment, is it? And it's not dedicated to
cycling.
They're
not wrong, but it's not going to hit any of the targets. And it's a little bit disingenuous, I think. That's why. But I don't disagree. I hate potholes.
Yeah. If it's used as a kind of proof that, or if it's included in cycle spend, then it is disingenuous. But, and if it's an either or situation, and that's obviously not ideal. But this is the kind of situation that it's boiled down to. There's so little available that anything that's there, everyone's kind of fighting
scratching
over
their
it.
Eyes to get hold of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it will play into that. I think this isn't a party politics thing either. I think all political parties going to an election will be talking sort of about all road users, you know, kind of like we all need to share the road and all of these things. So
yeah, like
pothole
it's a level
funds
playing
that
field.
Works for everybody. Oh, that works for everyone. How can you be against that? Will probably go unchecked quite a bit because it makes sense to most of middle England, but it won't help us hit 50% of journeys to be walked or cycled by 2030.
It won't. Another thing that came out that we might as well mention is that the kind of ratings of local authorities by Active Travel England. So yeah, it was quite interesting.
Yeah.
Quite a nice like starting point, I think. I mean, it's, yeah, I guess it shows how far we've got to go.
It's quite an interesting.
It's like a 0 to 4 rating. 0 is very sad. 4 is very good. No one got a 4. I think 4 people got a 0. 4 people got a 4 people, 4 where, local authorities.
Where were Worcester?
Worcestershire, 0.
Oh, there we go.
Sadly.
We need to do our follow-up with Worcestershire.
For
the reason of your friend, but also the councillor, Mike Rouse, who's a cabinet member.
Yes.
I talked to him at Conservative Party conference and is quite keen to do stuff.
Well,
and,
let's do it.
And
also,
wants
like
to do
Worcester.
More.
Go Worcester.
I don't think I've ever been to Worcester.
Well, there we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And 4 got 3, which is the highest.
Wasn't it 5 got 3?
1, 2, 3.
Well, give him
4.
A pat on the back.
Okay,
Greater
Manchester Combined Authority I've got on my list. Leicester, the city.
Yeah.
Leicestershire got 0. Oh. West Midlands Combined Authority got a 3. And
like
West Yorkshire CA
got a 3.
And Nottingham,
as well.
Okay, my mistake. I had a little spreadsheet, but
Nottingham.
I might have.
We went to Nottingham, didn't we? We went on the old track.
Nottingham are doing some good stuff, as we know.
Yeah.
That was probably one
nice
of their criteria. Has streets ahead been there to critique their infrastructure?
Yeah. Maybe once we go and inspect, shine a light.
I'm going to Leicester next week as well, actually, for a conference. I haven't cycled in Leicester, so I'm looking forward to it. So, interesting tactic. Normally it's kind of it's sort of a little bit like that, but I think it is more, it definitely feels to me anyway, more supportive than that because you need to have there's this kind of like thing that all councils are created equal and actually some are really good at this stuff and some aren't so good at this. And you have, I think, ratings for other things like social care and child services and things like that, obviously for potentially more urgent reasons. But you know, knowing whether and actually the important thing I think, which is interesting, is whether if you have someone that's got like a low tier, like let's say a tier 1 or even a tier 0, doesn't necessarily mean you won't get any funding.
No,
it just means that the kind of things you can bid for,
things like school streets are quite good for
and
councils.
And if you're
like
tier
that,
1, you can do that, and that still requires a certain amount of political will, doesn't it? And it still requires a certain amount of technical expertise, but it's totally manageable.
Yeah, they're really effective, obviously, as we know.
Yeah, totally. Well, yeah, and they're not universally popular, but they're pretty
popular.
It's
hard to argue against.
And you get to a point where you don't want your tier 1 authorities bidding for high complex 8-kilometre cycleways because they won't be able to potentially do it. So from a return on investment for government, it's a really smart thing to do. And it's a good benchmark and it's an incentive to try and do I think there are a couple of people, councils, that are put out by their rating, etc.
I guess it's embarrassing if you get a 0 or 1, but then it gives you somewhere to start from and aim for.
Yeah, I'd say a lot of Britain is sort of 1, yeah. You know, in active travel
just
terms.
How it
like,
is,
no
isn't
one
it?
Thinks it's, oh, Britain's really good at this stuff.
No one,
we have
no,
got
no
pockets
one.
of, and even ourselves, you know, West Midlands, one of the top rated authorities, very proud of that. But we're the very start of this journey, so it's really important.
Birmingham just pulled out a lane, didn't they? A little pop-up lane.
They did.
I noticed on the news.
You did? You saw the news?
Yeah.
Adam's looking deeply uncomfortable.
He is looking uncomfortable. Just,
that was last week's thing, and it's annoying. And it's,
there was a pop-up lane, and then they resurfaced the road, and they decided not to put the little ones back. And yeah. There are a number of people cycling in on this route who can no longer cycle on what is quite a busy road by the looks of it.
Yeah, and this is the kind of thing that will affect active travelling and ratings, so it does make me sort of slightly uncomfortable. It's obviously the wrong thing to do, and it's an example of the policy not matching the doing of highway authorities. But yeah, ultimately you have, I think, people spurred on, encouraged to do more because they, well, up until now they had the opportunity to bid for more funding. And now the pot is smaller.
No, it's been naughty, so. Yeah.
All right, well, I'm off to commentate on a bike race at the weekend called Milan San Remo.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've been there the last sort of 4 or 5 years in a row, and I'm going to experience the joys of riding down one of the most amazing cycle tracks in all of Europe.
Where's that?
It's the old railway line. Ah. It was replaced by a high-speed railway line inland, but they just tarmacked it instead.
What's it called?
I don't know what it's called, but it runs at least, I've ridden from, pretty sure from San Remo down to Imperia on the Ligurian coast, all the way along the coast.
Are you going to Milan? Like, it doesn't matter if it's starting, it doesn't start.
Yeah, but I don't go, I just go to the finish.
Going
to San Remo.
Because Milan's doing quite a bit as well. It would have been interesting.
Yeah.
Just setting you off on a little job. Yeah. You could have done a bit about Milan and then gone down the cycle path and given us a little audio clip and
that
could have created a new episode.
That would have been nice. But if I get a chance to do a little bit of audio out there, I will.
Yes, and just get some pictures on the WhatsApp group. That'd be good.
All right. Well, you've been listening to Streets Ahead. Our editor once more has been Claire Mansell. Let us know what you think at Pod Streets Ahead. Rate us, review us, and share the podcast with anyone you think might enjoy it.
Bye.
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 A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.